Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
We all take on different roles every day. One minute you're a parent, the next a chef. Or a driver. That's why the Volvo XC40 Recharge is designed to be as versatile as you are. It's fully electric and includes a 360-degree camera, Google built-in, and more. Contact your local retailer to learn more or visit volvocars.com/US. The Volvo XC40 Recharge, for every you. Some equipment optional. Google is a trademark of Google LLC.
Hello and welcome to the 5-Year Plan Podcast.
Hooray!
Not wow, Europe.
That was really that was beautifully harmonised. That was great. It's pod, yes, not Europe this week, but next week, who knows? It's pod 378, and it's the week the Palace have lost at home 4-1 to Chelsea. Joining me is Kevin Day. Hello to you.
Hello there.
How you doing?
All right, thank you, except my ears are cold. I've had my lockdown haircut, so I'm quite pleased to have these big old-fashioned 1970s headphones on.
You look great. You look happy.
Like, I look like an elderly Craig David. I know what I look like. It's fine.
I hadn't seen it. Oh, now I can't not see it. That's great. But anyway, Kevin will be filling us in later. That's a Craig David song. We also, Jesse Boyce is here. Hello to you.
How you doing, JD? I'm just a bit disappointed you didn't book us a pub garden for this one.
Should have done.
Have you got, Jess, have you got a haircut booked in?
Yeah, May the 16th.
Good. Okay, good. Yeah, you hang on to that hair. And joining us this week, it's one of our patron legends, second appearance on the pod. It's the one and only Mike Clark. Mike, hello. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, JD. It's good to be back. Bit different from the last one. Actually, face-to-face, the last one. It's, Zoom's a little bit different, but there you go.
Yeah.
It was, all good, Kevin, though.
Kevin's wiping away a tear from the memories of us being in the studio. Actually, face-to-face.
No, it's hair for my haircut.
Okay. For a moment, I thought we were having a bit of a
We could be
there.
Face-to-face soon in the Pawsons. It would have been freezing. Imagine if we booked it today. We'll book the Pawsons Garden and we'll be sitting out there freezing cold.
Maybe when the sun's out again, we'll do a pub garden episode or something.
That'd be nice.
It'd be nice to be up together. Yeah, it's hopefully it's on the horizon and not too far away. Now, speaking of the summer, guys, we know it's a big summer for Palace to get their house in order this summer. And speaking of which, this is telling you, when it comes to mortgages, we're delighted to, I think I'm quite proud of that, to be sponsored once again by Eternity Home Finance, a Croydon-based, Palace-supporting, family-run mortgage and protection advisors. For a free consultation on anything to do with mortgages and property portfolios, email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP if you want to get your house in order. And if they want to use that as a tagline, I will give them an invoice. Listen, we've got one patron on, but as ever, we do a shout out to a random patron. It wouldn't be random if it was Mike. So let's do another person. So can I get an applause? I mean, maybe it is. Let's see what happens. Can I get applause then for a random patron, please? It's Mr. Mike Clark. Just joking. It's Mr. Nick Conway.
Hey, hi, Nick.
Hey.
Hello, Nick. And you can join the Patreon like Nick and Mike and get all the rewards that entails, which includes the post-match podcast, which I will say are very, very good at the moment. The bits when Dom and Celsius are on, not when I'm on, but they are excellent. Patreon-only merchandise, new run coming at the end of this month, and access to the Patreon-only WhatsApp club, which I checked this morning after having nodded, looked at my phone for a little bit. 200 messages. So it does get very busy indeed in there. But anyway, if that sounds like something you'd be into, go to patreon.com/FYP podcast and you can sign up. Right, Kevin, let's talk about this home defeat to Chelsea. 4-1. Chelsea racing into a very quick lead, and Palace, as ever, then having to try and come back and not doing enough. It was a poor performance from Palace. It was a good performance from Chelsea, and we know they were looking for a reaction to that West Brom game, and they were very, very good from the start. Was it more Palace being bad or more Chelsea being good?
Yeah, it was Palace being bad. I mean, Chelsea were a very, very good side. First time they scored two goals in a game under Tuchel since he took them over. I think all the things we've spoken about this season, Palace, all the negative things, all came together in one half in a perfect shitstorm, basically. I've had to write some of them down and then cross some of them out because we haven't got time for all the things. But it's picking the same team, the same formation, the same tactics, no matter who we're playing against. No creativity or legs in midfield, no defensive cover for an ageing, stretched back four. Complete reluctance by the management team to recognise something was going on. It's just everything that could go wrong, and all the things that we've spoken about, that sometimes one happens in a game or two happens, but they all happened in that first half. And just after 10 minutes, Eze can't defend. As simple as that. Right, and we had this argument last week about you've got Batshuayi, who's a player who only scores goals, so find a way to get him in the team and score goals. If you've got a player who can't defend, but he's brilliant up front, don't put him in a situation where, I think Sky said, 78% of the time Eze got the ball in his own half and 40% in his own defensive third. It seemed obvious what to do. Get Ayew off, put Eze where Ayew was, and put Schluck where Eze is. And then that way you've got defensive cover down that left-hand side, and you've got Eze kills in their defenders' problems. But instead, Hodgson and Lewington just watched it. It could have been 6 or 7 in at half-time. And you just felt for all the players. Gaeta looked nervous. I think Gaeta's probably needs to put his hand up for two or three of the goals. He could have done better. No Palace player came out of that first half of any credit. Wilf was the Wilf we see every now and again, where right from the start he looked like he would rather be playing for the other team and sulked all the way through. Benteke couldn't hold the ball. And the one part in the second half when we did do what we think we can do, right? We scored a goal and then decided that we had no need to do that again for the rest of the game. That first half was put. And Chelsea were a good side. But once again, we looked like a team who were newly promoted to the Premier League, who were baffled by a really good Premier League team rather than a team that's coming up for their eighth season. So you can't make excuses for that first half. It was, and I felt for all of them, I felt for Wardy in particular, who was just totally stretched, and I felt for Eze. He's not a defender. He shouldn't be put in a situation where he's having to do all that work in front of Van Aanholt, and he's causing problems. Every time the ball went near, you know, Kiatis had a good season at centre half, but he gave free kick after free kick away. It's just all the things we've moaned about individually all came together wrongly in that first half. It was embarrassing, I thought.
There's a lot to unpick there. I want to come back to Guaita in a bit. I disagree with you on that, but I do want to come back to Guaita in a bit. I want to come back to this idea that we have this one good game, one bad game, one good game, one good. We can't seem to get some sort of consistency going. But Eze, Mike, let's talk about Eze, because he was one of the players. I mean, he was definitely at fault for the first goal. I think it was a bit collective as well, because I think Cahill went to clear it and whacked it at him. And then a combination of PVA and Gyro sort of both lost Havertz as he drifted in. So it's collective. But obviously Eze, before that, a few minutes before that, he had also lost the ball deep in his own half as well. And he does sort of have a habit. We talked last week about how good he was going forward, holding on to it at the right times, releasing at the right times. But this time, playing 30 yards further back, it was way too dangerous. What do you do with a player like Eze, who we know is talented, we know is developing, and we know as a result we're going to have games where he makes muck-ups as part of that development. But how do you manage that as a... Because we want younger players in the team. That's what we said. We want to lower the age and do that. Is it a case of management almost giving over responsibility to him, putting him in the wrong position for a game like this, as Kevin says, as a great team who will punish those mistakes?
Oh, I think it's a classic one. Right? Everyone says he's got to play to learn. Roy said he's got to learn the hard bits, the bits that he probably didn't have to do at QPR. Roy's also said that it took Townsend and Slup years to learn that role. So, and is he going to learn that on the bench against sides like Chelsea? And Chelsea were outstanding in that first 15 minutes. They didn't give us a kick. They didn't give him any time on the ball. They'd obviously done their homework. And so put us on the back foot and we're going to capitulate. And we did. And the game was over after that first mistake. There's the arguments with, should Slup have started? Was Schlupp fit enough to start? There's those questions as well. But I think with Eze, his first season was always going to be that. It was either going to come out the blocks like an absolute sort of legend and go from thing, or he was going to, which is what he's been this year, he's been a bit hit or miss. He's been great in some games. He's been gone missing in other games. And that's a young player stepping up from the Championship to the Premiership in a side that really doesn't have a lot of possession for him to do his thing in. And when he has had that opportunity, we'll all sort of hark back to the Sheffield United game, the free kick against Leeds, that shimmy and shot against Wolves, all those sorts of things. But he does do what he did on Saturday. He likes to try and play his way out of trouble. And when you're in that position where he was, it should have been Rose Ed, old school. I think it was as Selzy said, it's not fashionable to do it. You've got to try and play your way out nowadays. And in some circumstances, that's not really the right thing to do. It's one of those ones with Eze. If he doesn't play, everyone's going to be on Roy's back in these sorts of things. So you've got to learn. I think you just let him learn. Or, as Dom said, you play him further forward.
That's exactly it, Mike. It's not a question of whether he should play. He's one of the best players we've got already in the first season. Of course he should play. It's where you play him.
Yeah.
Play him where he can cause some danger, B, give their defenders a problem, and C, not give a goal away every time he gives the ball away in that situation. We didn't... Which of us wanted Eze brought in and think, right, give him 2 or 3 years so he learns the defensive part of the game? We don't want him as that sort of player. Yeah. Every QPR fan tells us the one place not to play him is just wide on the left in a 4-4-2. Yeah. And that's where we play him all the time. And that's fine against Sheffield United and Wolves and Leeds, where he can sort of improvise and come inside. Play him. IU's not bringing anything to the team in that position. You can't put your finger on what position it is. I know he's working hard, all right, but he's working hard in the wrong place. Put Eze up there, and at least their central defenders can't then spend the game wandering aimlessly into the to midfield when they wanted to, because they had nothing to stop them doing that. That makes no sense to me, and it's only going to affect his confidence if he's like doing that. And if he's not putting it into Rose Ed, then he's not being trained to put it into Rose Ed. It just makes no sense to me, though.
Well, I think there's an element of that's exacerbated by having PVA behind him, as we know. Absolutely. He's got an aversion to defending sometimes. I think there's a difference if you had a Schlupp either behind him or Tyrick, who's a much more solid, dependable defender that allows Eze to actually learn that trade. It's a bit like Aaron Wan-Bissaka having Townsend to help him out in that learning period. PVA is not that sort of defender. And there's the other argument there is, would somebody like, or he said with the likes of Mitchell when he first came into the side, he had Sacco there and Tompkins to help him coach through the game. You can't see Chiarte doing that sort of thing, because there's an argument that he's still learning the centre-half, centre-back role. As much as he plays it at international level, it's a bit different week in, week out. He's there to be that little bit of pace that we lack with our other centre-backs, because there's an argument on Saturday that we miss that third person in the centre of the park. Yep. To kind of nullify their, yep, the Jorginho type thing. But if, yeah, you replace Cech with Scott or Martin Kelly, we've got no pace at the back. And again, the fourth goal was really Joel being found out lacking for pace against, who was it, scored the fourth?
Pulisic.
Yeah, he was. They were level when that race started, and Joel was 3-4 yards behind by the time Pulisic put it in the back of the goal. And that's the problem. That's why we're having to sit so deep sometimes, and we haven't got the pace on the pitch without the likes of Schlupp to then move forward. So we're kind of digging ourselves a hole with those sorts of selections, but it all comes down to the squad again. Do we really have enough cover at the moment to really make that many changes? But I do think that playing PVA with Eze does make that left side very soft. And you can see most teams, once they see that, they just push down that side, which they did with Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah.
And he gets lots of space. There's so much space for the switch. You can see it in the comms. They were saying that the diagonal ball to Hudson-Odoi was on all day.
All time.
And it was every time.
Yeah. I don't want to hammer Eze too much, because obviously there were 10 other players on the pitch on Saturday who also weren't very good. He wasn't the only person that didn't play very well. It was just that mistake obviously got punished. Kevin obviously mentioned Guaita there, who not the only person to criticise him, because Graham Souness absolutely hammered him at halftime and said he was at fault for, I think, pretty much all three goals. We had a question from Aaron Morris, who says... Hi, Aaron. Great has been class at times and kept us in games, but why does he not come and catch the ball 5 yards out for the Zuma header? I think that's what I would say, Jesse. The Zuma goal is probably the one where he is probably most at fault. First one, I think he sort of can't see it as it's coming, possibly blindsided by his own defender. What are your thoughts on Great at the weekend? Because he did also keep, as Kevin said, could have been 5 or 6, kept us in it with some other, you know, classic Great saves.
Well, I think as broadly we were second best in most scenarios throughout the game. So I think kind of Gaeta just falls into that by default a little bit. It's just one thing leads to the other. I mean, the Zuma header was actually an amazing leap. Like, you could see Cahill was only angry at himself. You know, he was so furious that he'd been outlepped for that goal. And I don't know. I feel like headers on the 6 yard line, with any kind of pace, you're either in the mix to try and contest the ball, or you're at the mercy of where it ends up. So I don't know what Gaeta could have done having not gone for the ball. I think the first goal, there was enough curl on it from Havertz just to get it around him. It was close enough just to kind of not blame him for it. But I think the worst thing about the... I agree, let's not hammer Eze too much. I feel like even Wan-Bissaka got sent off in his first season for some sort of push against Man United from memory, or was it someone else?
You know, Liverpool, like, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Salah.
So, yeah, okay, it was a dirty dive, I remember that. So, you know, so you expect some sort of learning to be done in real time with young players in their first season. But I think the worst thing that Eze was guilty of was ball watching. Once he'd given it away, he was a little bit too focused on trying to get the ball back than tracking Havertz, who dispossessed him. Because you can't really blame Riederwald for not picking him up. It was definitely Eze lost the ball, was focused on the ball, and forgot about the man that had just nicked it off him. And that, I think that's another thing he was guilty of. And then just back to this theme of us being second best, I think there was a chance that Mount had, simply because Zaha didn't track his run, which made you want to blame PVA at first. But if you look, Zaha didn't track him when he should have just kept with him. And then, as Mike just said, Wardy as well, second best at the end there as well. So it just looked like we were just really just finding it hard to keep up. And the scoreline, and just, you know, we had one shot, one goal, they had 23 shots, you know, completely outclassed. It's just good. To me, it's just got all the hallmarks of Palace just sort of spluttering over the finish line towards the end of the season again, having run out of steam. So I don't know if there's much to circle back on Gaeta. I don't know if he's guilty of anything out of the ordinary, given everything else we saw across the park.
On the I thought Gaeta and Cahill looked nervous right from the kickoff together, as though they knew what was coming, as though they'd looked at Chelsea and thought they seemed to be in the mood. But the first goal, Gaeta was just overcompensated on his near post. He was so worried about being beaten on the near post that he stepped too far across. The third goal, it was really powerful, but it went through him a little bit. The header, if he doesn't come for that header, he's got to stop it. It was straight at him. It's as simple as that. But it's not. But he also made three or four world-class saves. The thing with Eze, no one's having a go at Eze. I'm not having a go at Eze. I'm having a go at the coaches. Because, you know, we talk about Wan-Bissaka. If Wan-Bissaka was making his mistakes in the centre-forward situation, you'd be going, You shouldn't be there. You shouldn't. But he was making his mistakes as a right back, and you go, fine. He's learning his trade as a right back. I don't want to see Eze as a defensive left-sided wing back or left-sided winger. That's what's annoying me. Of course, he's going to make mistakes there because that's not what where he's supposed to play. And I don't think that's where we bought him. Mike talks about having three centre backs. It's one of those games again. Horses for courses. We needed an extra body in midfield for that game. We needed three in midfield, so don't play 4-4-2 in that particular game. Because Benteke is doing all right. Don't play Benteke just because he's been doing all right. Find another way of playing the game, and that's what frustrated me. It's like you can't really blame the players for not being better than they are, or for being blamed out of position. You can blame 10 years of recruitment for that if you want to get into that, but. It's the worst thing of all the things we talked about is the fact that they just did nothing to change it, and it was obvious what had to be changed. And it was I don't think there's any other management team. And when Rory gets it right, as he often does, and I'm sure we'll have the usual conversations about whether he's going to be our manager next season. And I really wouldn't worry me if he is. But sometimes something's got to change in that coaching team somewhere. There's got to be more dynamism. There's got to be more. It's got to be more reactive. As simple as that. There's the whole world's watching. That was embarrassing. That first half. It would have been embarrassing if it was our first season in the Premier League. You just feel so kind of helpless watching it because you think, well, you know, you're a good manager. You know, you only have to look at David Moyes. But we'll have this discussion about we need to change the manager. So West Ham. When West Ham Moyes was first managing West Ham. They didn't play the way they're playing now. They've brought him back, and they've obviously said to him, we need to change the way we play football. That's what we need to say to Roy. If Roy's our manager next season, we need to say to him, look, you can have the money, you can bring your players in, but every now and again, you've got to find a different way of playing, because at the moment, we're getting battered by anybody that's got a little bit more class than us. We're fine. We're fine against the teams around us and against the teams below us. But that's a reflection of the quality of the Premier League, not a reflection of how good we are.
Yeah, I mean... there is an air of, well, after the game, Roy did say, apparently, in his post-match that, in hindsight, he would have picked different personnel, which I'm guessing is an allusion to Schlupp over Eze, possibly. Because when Schlupp came on, I'd say that change was made, and we were more direct and had more dynamism, and Schlupp, he sets up the goal, and you realise we have really missed that sort of thrust from Schlupp. So Roy did sort of concede that after the game, but obviously that was sort of too late by then. But there is an air of uncertainty around the club at the moment. It's 12, 13 players out of contract, the manager out of contract, and Phillips Von David, our listeners, says, is the poor commitment and effort due to future contracts? And I think, Mike, it would be, no one here is claiming the players don't try and there's no commitment or effort. But when you've got that air of uncertainty, players not sure if they're going to get a new deal, if they're moving on, the manager not sure, that at some point has an effect on things on the pitch. And as Jesse says, they were ball watching at the weekend. They were off the pace. And at some point, when the culture around the club is one of uncertainty and not sure what's happening, well, then that uncertainty and not sure what's happening ends up on the pitch. And when you play a team as good as Chelsea, they punish you for it.
Certainly can't help, can it? And if the rumours are true that they're not being told anything, no one's got an idea of whether they're playing for a contract, whether they might as well not be playing for a contract. It's only going to make the atmosphere around the supporters bad, because people want to know what's going on. People want to know who to support, who to write off. But from a sort of sports psychology point of view, it's not going to help. And you're going to start to see who are the real professionals and who are the ones that are, okay, well, the grass might be greener there type of scenarios. It's a difficult one from, as Kev will know, from the financial side is, do they make those decisions once they're mathematically sure that they're going to get the Premier League money next year? Is it been engineered to allow them to clear the decks if need be? No one's communicating, so no one really knows what's going on. But from a sort of coming from a sports background, it, as a player, that can't help you if you don't know whether you're going to be getting a contract, whether you're going to have to up sticks and move your family, because that's what's likely to happen. There's not going to be many of them that are going to stay in London. So again, there's going to just be an air around the training ground of, well, who is getting a contract, who's not getting a contract, who am I going to be playing for next year? If I do stay and if I have signed a contract, am I going to get played because Roy might not be here? It's just going to create a whole raft of uncertainty amongst the players. And again, you will get that sort of Chinese whispers, I assume, of, well, I've heard he's going to get a contract or not get a contract. And I think we as fans would love it to be sorted out, but I'm sure the players really need it sorting out. And whether Wilf stays, whether Roy stays, those sorts of things, they're going to be factors that the other players who are being asked to potentially have a contract to want to know as well. So it's all, again, it's that whole sort of thing in juggling act. And I'm sure Steve's and Dougie are working on it, but we need some sort of clarity. Otherwise, we're just going to see potentially another, considering the games we've got, of another pretty miserable 5 or 6 weeks of football to watch.
The sad fact is, for a lot of our players that are out of contract, I don't think they're worrying about where they're going to be going, because I don't think 8 or 9 of them, I don't think anyone's going to be banging down the door for any of them. To be perfectly honest, I think the big worry is, like most employees in any job during a pandemic, they're worried about whether or not they've got a job at Palace next season, not where they're going. And that's if that hasn't been sorted out, then that's shameful, to be perfectly honest. But I don't know. I mean, the odd thing is as well, for all the negativity and criticism coming from me, it's only 6 days ago that we were talking about a good performance at Goodison Park. There was no hint then that the commitment or the energy was less. Yeah. It just looked like we weren't ready to play Chelsea. And I don't know if that's anything to do with them worrying about contract. It's just, for whatever reason, and Cahill was indicating that as well. Apparently Cahill went nuts at half-time, and it just seemed like they were on the beach, if anything. It's like, as Mike and Jesse alluded to, it's a little bit like after the Bournemouth game last season. It almost felt like, well, we've got the point last week that's probably kept us safe. We're not going to beat Chelsea. So, but whereas we all said after last week's pod, well, great, let's take that Everton performance. Let's get off on the right foot against Chelsea. Within 5 minutes, we knew the game was lost. They scored, even, we were going to lose that game. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. There was a guy that tweeted us, actually, from FYP, saying, I stopped watching after 4 minutes. I said, mate, it was 0-0 after 4 minutes.
She's right.
He was like, I could just tell. And in many ways, he was right. It is weird, because obviously end of the season is traditionally when we have our sort of burst and we start to really relax and play great football and get some good results and everything becomes entertaining. But it's obviously different this season. You know, everything's in reverse, really. So anyways, but speaking of things not being in reverse and going forward, does that work? Yeah, it kind of works. We're going to move on to part two. Before we do that, I've had a question from Achini. Who says, can we just say, good goal, Christian. Great to see Rakitić on the bench and just write off the rest of the match. I should have said that at the start of the pod, Achini. Yeah. Apologise. We had to go through it. But in part two, we've got a clip from our patron that we mentioned at the start of the pod. So from our post-match patron pod, this is Rob, Don Fifield and Adam Sells chatting about that Chelsea game of the weekend. If you like what you hear in the next bit, go to patreon.com/FYP podcast and you can sign up and get the post-match pods hours after the games happen each week. But if you're already a patron, by the way, on this version, you won't hear this because you've heard it already. So you go straight into part three. But if you're not a patron, here is a clip from our post-match patron pod.
Yeah. It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
But it's also, I mean, we keep saying this, but and Hodge, Roy has actually defended this in terms of attitude. And I think, as you said, part of the problem today was, you know, when you look back in hindsight, you see the players kind of drip drab. But it was there's no excuse for a professional football player to consistently lose possession like Luka did in the middle during the first half. There's no excuse to consistently misplace passes. And I mean that in the sense that these aren't like difficult passes that he's having to string through. These are simple passes that we kept being caught out with. These are players being caught in possession when, again, it's that meandering kind of slow.
They were panicked. They'd gone, hadn't they? They'd absolutely gone. There was that moment that Ayew played the ball out, a diagonal pass out, perfectly, like precision perfect, between Wilf and Benteke, so neither of them could get it, and it went straight out of play. And it prompted two or three Palace players to start screaming at each other on that pitch and having a right guy. And that was at 2-0. And the whole thing was a picture of frustration. They all just absolutely exasperated with each other, with the way they were playing, with the way that they couldn't summon a response to a bloody good, frantic Chelsea performance where they were swarming all over them. Every time Luka picked up possession, again, he had two players on him. Yeah. You know, when Mason Mount picked up possession, Palace players weren't near him. Everything was wrong about it.
Would you say it's a little bit concerning for all of these players to have this kind of simmering undercurrent of frustration that every now and then, you know, there'll be spells where Palace do well and they have like a 4 or 5 game spell where things kind of click a little bit and we pick up some points. And, you know, the last 5 games, they've not been dreadful. There have been times when you know, we've done enough to get the points that we've needed to stay up, and that's ultimately what matters. But it does feel like there have been times this season where you've got that tension and that kind of anger in the team where they almost, I think the last time they had it was, I can't remember which game it was, but they ended up saying that they had to have a chat. They all had to talk about it. They all worked out, you know, they basically had a big discussion at the training ground about it, and Burnley, a big argument. Yeah. I think it was Burnley. And yet it feels like this was one of those again where...
But it's what happens at a mid-table team.
That
if you have 4 or 5 games where you only lose one, which is, I think, pretty much what Palace has just gone through, then that will be enough to get you into mid-table. It's also indicative of a team where half the squad doesn't know what's going on next season. Yeah. I mean, that has to be a part of it. It's not going to make relations within the setup particularly comfortable, I wouldn't have thought. I mean, I think Roy's let that slip a few times of late with some of his press briefings as well. It's not an easy situation for anybody to be in. Weirdly, I don't actually think that was an outstanding performance from Chelsea. But my frustration is that Palace didn't do enough to make them need to be outstanding to beat us, because they really didn't need to be. I mean, it was livid. I wanted us to lay a glove on them today. That was the thing that was desperately wanted to see, and we didn't until it was the game had long gone. And even then, we only had one shot in the entire match.
Yeah,
I think Tom, I'll go back to my sort of stay in the game comment earlier when you were talking about that. In order to beat these teams, you're never going to out-football them, as you've seen today, right? They're better than us. They're much better than that. When you get results against these teams, you have to be very athletic and match them physically. So even if you can't match them in terms of quality, you've got to have really athletic players that get in people's faces and make life difficult for them. And two, you then need the Andros, Townsend, Wilfried. I was thinking about the game Roy's first win in charge at home to Chelsea with Wilfried and Andros, Townsend being an absolute handful for Chelsea, who I think had Gary Cahill and David Luiz playing centre-half that day. And we got at them and caused them some problems. And the reason I come back to the stay in the game thing is the worst thing you can do when you're playing a top team is concede two goals early in a game or even one, because the minute they get a foothold in the game, all the confidence starts to run through the veins of those players that have got tremendous talent. So suddenly they're all cock-a-hoop and playing with their tails up. It's a different team to the one you're playing if you get the first goal, when it all gets a little bit frustrating and they're finding it very, very difficult. But you've got to sort of be in their faces and beat them up physically a little bit in these contests in order to get any sort of foothold. And, you know, losing early goals against them and cheap ones at that, you know, I mean, it was, you know, you just can't do that. It's too difficult. You know, you give yourself a mountain to climb. But the worst thing you can do against top opponents is give them a head start. And the first goal was a head start, really, I'm afraid. You know, and that just gave them everything that they needed to get in their stride and start expressing themselves. And that's exactly what they did. So, you know, we were architects of our own downfall in that respect. But on the other side of it, I still can't. You can't get away from the fact that they've got much further superior players than us all over the field. So you know that. So much as you want to be critical and we should have done better and all that sort of stuff, you know, they don't expect to lose to Crystal Palace, and we shouldn't expect to beat Chelsea or take points off them.
But likewise, even accepting that, and I do accept that, Selzy, Roy was given that option. He was given that get out. You know, they're better than you, Roy. What was the, you know, what could we really have expected other than this? Was it just one of these days? And his response, I thought, was quite honest. He said, possibly, but I don't accept that. We're in the same league. We need points. They need points. We maybe need to accept we can't quite go toe-to-toe with them, which is what you just said.
Yeah.
But we need to have enough belief and self-respect to do more than we did today. The first half was nowhere near good enough for us. And that is the key. You're right. You have to summon a performance. You have to summon some kind of way of smothering a team that is that good. And in that first half, we didn't smother them. We actually just lay down and said, stampede all over us. We don't mind. We're going to do anything about it.
You're not going to get that athletic in your face performance when the likes of Gyro and Eze, who are two of your four midfield players, are going through the motions. But the valid question
from that is that if we can recognise that, and we know that, and we've spoken about it enough, if we recognise that, is there not an onus on the management to recognise it as well and realise that actually this might be an occasion to make that bold decision and to take him out and put Schluppi in and put McCarthy in and give a bit of
I can say that you know that's a fair point, Don, but also, as you said earlier, if he dropped both of them before the kickoff,
it would have been outrage.
And if we'd lost 3-0 to them today doing that anyway, what did he change the team for? You know, hindsight is, you know, everyone can be captain hindsight, can't they? You know, but I don't think it's a coincidence that we've conceded a lot more goals this season. I think Andros Townsend, much as he's got his detractors, I think my brother gave me a stat that he'd won or attempted more tackles than any player in the Premier League or something over some period recently.
This season?
And
Most of any player in the Premier League.
Well, that underlines my point about how hard you need to work out of possession. Yeah. And, you know, don't be mistaken into believing that if they're Manchester United or Manchester City, they just stroll around and pop the ball around. When they haven't got it, they don't give you very long before they're in your face and getting it back off you. But again, we're not a young, athletic team, I don't think, that can play like that, really. I don't think we've got the personnel to do that. And I think that's where we're going to need to you know, you need more pace in the team all round, snappier, sharper into tackles, quicker with the ball, quicker moving the ball, quicker on the counter attack. We need more pace in our side. I've said it to you before the season started. You know, Ismail Assar, for example, is an absolute speed machine, and you get him the ball wide, he carries the ball 40 yards for you quickly. You know, Yannick Bolasie used to do it for us in these games and be a handful, even against the top six clubs. For all his failings, Yannick Bolasie was an absolute handful to play against and very difficult for them to compete with. And that's what I'm saying to you about what Dom's saying about Roy there, is he's saying, yeah, we know all that. We know they're better. We know that. But we need to compete. But that means that you need athletic players that are going to try and temper or maul or suffocate the extravagant talent that they're up against, and then hope your extravagant talent is going to turn the tide. There's no other way to do it. To use a boxing analogy, if you go toe-to-toe with him, you get knocked out in the first round. You know, the only way you do is spoil the fight and stay in it right to the end and hope you get your chance to land your knockout blow. That's the reality.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Welcome back to part three of the 5-Year Plan podcast.
Hey!
Got there in the end. So that part two was our patron pod clip. And it's a very, very good episode, the post-Chelsea one. So I recommend listening to it. In part three, Kevin, Palace have announced their finances for the previous financial year last week or this week or this weekend or something. I was going to get Andy Street to come on and talk about it and give it an explainer. I decided that was too boring. So I've told him not to bother. But what we've done instead, because you and Kieran Maguire have covered it on your excellent Price of Football podcast this week, Guy, who's the producer there, has very kindly said, I can borrow a bit of that audio and drop it in now. So this is Kieran explaining the Palace finances. And it sounds like okay news.
Crystal Palace have released their latest figures. Is there anything of concern? And before you start, Kieran, can I ask you to remove your Brighton hat? Because there were some Palace fans, I'm afraid, who took umbrage yesterday at being advised by a Brighton fan that there may not be anything to worry about.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was a bit confused by that.
You have to acknowledge that all football fans have their share of numpties, Kieran, and unfortunately, there are some Palace fans who won't take good news from a Brighton fan. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, but this was brought to my attention by a mutual friend of ours who's a Palace fan, and they haven't actually published the accounts. It was sort of hidden away at the arse end of the website, but there's a couple of pages, and the good news is the income stood up for 2019-20. It was more than West Ham, for example, which I think might surprise some people. Although it does include the full Premier League season, because Palace, and I think they did this very sensibly. They extended their accounts to the 31st of July. So, therefore, that included all 38 games from the Premier League last season, whereas those clubs that have only gone to the 30th of June have only got 31 games. They did lose quite a lot of money, but, again, looking at all of the clubs in the Premier League, the total losses are now running up to £1.1 billion for 2019-20. So it was nothing major to be concerned about. I think the results will be better this season, despite the fact that we've got no people attending matches. And the reason they will be better is that the clubs have now got more of a control over costs. They had £58 million of cash in the bank account at the 31st of July. That's not too shabby. Producer Guy would probably sneer at it, but for the rest of us, we'd be quite impressed.
So there we go, Kevin. That was you and Kieran discussing the finances there. There is a bit more on that. I've only used a tiny bit. So if you want to hear more from that, do listen to the latest Price of Football podcast on wherever you get your pods are or whatever app you're on. Do go and listen to it. There's a bit more from the two of you there. But the overriding message, despite, what is it, £58 million losses, I believe, is actually one that, in the grand scheme of the Premier League, it's about right.
Yes, I didn't know whether to be proud or ashamed of the Palace fans. So I tweeted before the pod that we would be discussing the Palace statement with Kieran. And Kieran, of course, supports the Seaweed. And for every one Palace fan who tweeted, oh, that'd be interesting, I'll listen to that, there were three going, I'm not doing a care. Who cares what that Brighton bastard's got to say about Palace's finances? He'll probably lie anyway. So, no, it's actually good news. I mean, it sounds solid. Kieran says they're probably better than you'd expect. There's an accounting thing because we took advantage of the extra month. So there are accounts over 13 months rather than 12. It's the only real worry is the 93%. Is of that money is on income, is on which is a bigger figure than a lot of clubs. But he said Palace. He's actually been quite full of praise for Palace because he said there was a time, 2014-15, when our finances were a mess, and he said the club have it's not been pretty, but the club have actually redressed that. So our finances are in pretty decent shape, but as we've discussed at the end of whatever that last part was, two for some of you, three for others. Just occasionally, you just throw a tin of alphabet spaghetti up in the air and see what comes down, didn't you? Basically, yeah. But the summer contracts thing is going to be interesting. But I think the big question that we all want to know is, and we won't until summer, is whether that should leave. Kieran reckons it should leave some leeway for investment in players, but it's certainly not as bad as. And I think the combined loss, Kieran says, between all no Premier League club's going to make a money this season. Man City lost £79 million, I think. I think the combined loss between all the clubs is something like £1.9 billion in the Premier League. So, profit or loss is kind of immaterial in the last year, getting through the pandemic. But, of course, the next two, this is why it's so important to stay up, because the next two seasons will still be really adversely affected by the pandemic. So, which is, again, another reason, and I know Jesse spoke about, why I think Steve Parish might be cautious when it comes to changing managers. I think the next two seasons, the really, really important thing is not how attractive the football is that we play, it's whether we're still in the Premier League. But, yeah, the finances are all right, actually. That was a relief, because I was slightly nervous talking about it, but it's a relief to discover that sound and solid are the words that Kieran used.
Well, that's very good. Anyway, coming from a Brighton fan, actually, that obviously that wasn't easy for him to say.
Well, to be fair, he's much more mature about these sort of things than I am, really. he's literally of the "it's just another 3 points" brigade, although he didn't feel quite like that minutes when I texted him seconds after Benteke scored. Didn't seem to be just another 3 points at that moment. But there again, as he pointed out, it was probably childish of me not to wait at least 3 minutes.
Exactly.
So the whistle was still reverberating around the Amex when I was.
All right, good stuff. Well, anyway, check out Price of Football for not just Palace stuff, finances across the world of football. It's a very, very, very insightful podcast.
Yeah, big story on our growth this week. That's a good story.
Story on what?
Our growth. We had our growth and Real Madrid this week. That's the level we cover.
Well, in what other podcast would you get Real Madrid and our growth together? You just wouldn't.
Well, this one, obviously.
Right, let's take a quick break, because afterward we've got a lot of questions from our listeners.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Welcome back to part four of the five-year plan podcast.
Hey.
Sponsored this week by Eternity Home Finance. For a free consultation on anything to do with mortgages and property portfolios, email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP. Right, a lot of questions to get through, so let's see how many we can do. We've got a couple here on Benteke. I mean, obviously, we didn't really mention it in part one, did score a goal for us on Saturday and seems to be going through a bit of a purple patch, arguably his best patch since that first season when he scored 17 goals after arriving from Liverpool. PC Wires says, Benteke, hi PC, Benteke has refound his scoring form. Palace lose 4-1 in the two games in which he scores. Is this a definition of typical Palace? I think it probably is. And then someone else who, actually, I've lost their name, so I apologise, has put Benteke, transfer fee equivalent to roughly £1 million per goal scored in the Prem. Good value for money. Jesse, is that good value for money?
Oh, so here you go. So he's apparently, on one side, you can say he scored 7 in 12, right? That sounds great. Mm. On the other hand, it's his first home goal of the season.
Mm.
So it's like, you don't know what, relatively, he's had such a bad patch over the last 2 or 3 years. Anything he does that's sort of half decent looks very decent for him right now. But come on, we need a striker who's scoring his first home goal of the season before April. You know, I just think that how low of our expectations come of Benteke. That he only really, where does his 7 and 12 come from? Does he really want that contract? You know, is he really working that bit harder? Is his sense of urgency just automatically sort of been triggered by what's going on contract-wise that's been spoken about already? I mean, I'm feeling it's getting to the point now where offering Benteke a contract is looking like a no-brainer, because where else are we going to get 7 and 12 kind of striker for free? You know, it's just, it is reaching no-brainer to kind of give him a contract. I get that. But at the same time, I feel we should be expecting better of our first-choice striker. And then you see Mateta is like, he's not getting off the bench, having given us a little bit of optimism against Brighton and so on. So I don't know, really. It makes me feel like we just really need to just start thinking ahead, because I'm in disbelief that we've still got Benteke on our books, if I'm honest. Go on, Kev.
I was going to say, to me, I agree with you with Mateta, and I'm sure Roy will say, well, you know, these players take time to get used to the pace of the Premier League, but if Eze is getting used to the Premier League on the pitch, I don't see why Mateta's not getting used to the Premier League on the pitch. There's no logic there to me. There's no logic that Batshuayi, who we know can score goals, and he wouldn't have started even if he was eligible on Saturday, but if you want to defend Benteke, and a lot of Palace fans still do, look at the Brighton game, one cross in the box, he scores. Chelsea game, one cross in the box, he scores. Tottenham game, one cross in the box, he scores. If we play to his strengths, he scores. But again, we've got a player on the pitch, and we're not changing the way we play to include him. Yeah, we had this argument about Batshuayi last week, but we don't change the way we play to bring Benteke into the game. It comes back to that, we're going to play 4-4-2 or a version of 4-4-2, come what may. But yet, when we do, and probably accidentally, change our tactics to bring these players in, they score goals. So if you're Benteke, you'd be sitting in the dressing room, I imagine, or saying to your agent, tell them that when I get the ball in front of me in the air, I score goals. It's as simple as that.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, Benteke really is probably doing his job, because he doesn't get that often, that many chances to do it. But when he does recently, he has been doing it. I find with Benteke, it's sort of romanticism comes into it a bit, because I still see that player that we signed in 2016 and who was absolutely fantastic for us. But as you say, Kevin, we did play the way, you know, we played to his strengths and we benefited from it. Mitchie, I'm not convinced about this time around. I just don't think, even when he has played, he's really offered. He looks a different player to the player we signed 2 years ago. And
it's, well, when's he played? He hasn't started yet, has he?
No, he had that run at the start, didn't he? And he had a couple of offside goals, which admittedly he was very unlucky with. But I think Benteke has offered more. I actually would like to see Mateta play. I think your point about Eze versus Mateta is, I hadn't even thought about that. I think that's very, very fair. I mean, Dom did say on the post-match pod that Mateta's people had alluded to the fact that they're not expecting him to play much this season, and the next season is he's expected to feature more often. So this is a kind of a bedding in period. But with Palace on enough points now to stay up, would it be time to see a bit more from him? I think it would just be a bit exciting, you know, a bit of fun to see this new player who obviously started off. You don't get better than a back heel goal on your first start at Brighton. I mean, it literally doesn't. That's legend status almost already. So
it's a back heel double nutmeg.
Back heel double nutmeg. First touch.
But as Jesse was saying, he looked really good in that first half against Brighton. There aren't many other teams that would go, well, he scored a back heel double nutmeg. We won't pick him in for the next game.
Seeing as he's in the minority of Palace players who've got a contract next year, it might be a good idea just to play him, seeing as he's guaranteed to play next year.
Well, let me put this question to all three of you. I'll go to Mike first, but I'll put it to the other two of you as well. It's from Ollie Browett.
Hi, Ollie.
Hi, Ollie. He said, who should be starting? These are his words. Tekkers, JP, or Michy? Mike.
Gut says Benteke. I think if we're going to carry on playing 4-4-2 with Wilf, and I think Wilf is almost the sticking point of why we're playing a 4-4-2, I think Benteke is his best foil. Michy played and scored his goals as a lone striker in a 4-4-3 or 4-3-3. And we've not played that. And I don't think he's set up for a 4-4-2 personally. And I think the Mateta thing, I think we got him 6 months early because it was either that or miss out on him in the summer or get the deal sorted earlier rather than later. And he's one for the future. Which is, if his people are to be believed, I think that's what they think. That thing, but it, for me, in a 4-4-2, I think if you're going to play Wilf as the other striker, I think Benteke starts for me.
So you'd offer Benteke a new deal?
I'm of the opinion of, like Jesse, how much is somebody going to cost that's going to score 10 goals a season on a free? Is going to be unlikely. So have we got the money to buy somebody with Benteke's experience as much as anything else? Is there an argument that he's playing for a contract, hence why he's got the 7 goals? Who knows? And I think there's an argument there from that's maybe how they're managing it. But I think it's going to be tough to find someone who will give you that sort of player on a free. Who's going to be available in the summer on less wages than him and with no money up front?
Kevin, Tekkers, JP or Michy?
The trouble with this debate is it presupposes that we're starting 4-4-2 every game, which we are.
Yeah.
So my argument, I frankly, you know, I'm a massive Batshuayi fan. We've got a proven international goal scorer who's picked for the world's number one ranked international team every squad. Find a way to get him in the team. That's, you know, but we can't because we play 4-4-2 or a version of 4-4-2 because everything's based around keeping Wilf in the side. It's as simple as that, as Mike said. It's all based around keeping Wilf in the side. If you're going to play Benteke, and again, I would keep him. I'd been saying for a long time, Benteke and Batshuayi. If you play for, I just wish Roy would be a bit more honest. Just play a 4-4-2. If you want to play 4-4-2, stop wrapping it up. Just play 4-4-2, and like Burnley do. It doesn't always work, but they just play a 4-4-2. Put Benteke and Batshuayi up front together. Yeah, they've got a relationship. They get on really well. Martinez loves them both at Belgium. But Benteke is the answer to the question because we know he's the answer to the question. There's no point saying anything different because we'll all be wrong. Yeah.
I think we have played them up front together, wasn't it the Newcastle at home game they started?
Yeah, it's together. Disastrous.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was at a bad time, Mike.
But we didn't have Wolf, did we?
So, no, we didn't. So
yeah, that's true.
It was almost forced on them, and then you lose that. Well, what would have happened if Wolf had been on the left hand side there that night? And I just think
we wouldn't have played 4-4-2 if he was. That's
we would have done, but he'd have been the other striker.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And I just genuinely think that Batshuayi is just used to playing as the lone striker with either three behind him in a sort of 4-2-3-1 type formation, which they play at Belgium, and he's just used to that. I mean, he's not a classic English 4-4-2 scenario.
Well, also he's got Kevin De Bruyne behind him at Belgium.
Kind of helps.
the other big and problem as well.
A couple of hazards.
Yeah, I take it all back. Yeah.
It's not quite Jimmy Mack.
Yeah. It's not quite, no. J-Dog, Tekkers, JP or Mitchie then for you?
Tekkers, JP and Mitchie sounds like the headliner at Brixton Houston then on Friday night.
I've been there in a while.
It does sound like some sort of cult band I'd not heard of that I should have heard of. Yeah. That Steve Brown might give me a heads up on.
And Enders looks after.
Yeah.
But forgets where he leaves him occasionally, yeah.
I'm definitely in the camp of thinking we probably could have done more with Batshuayi this season. I just, you know, I don't see how he's become so redundant. I just don't get it. You know, he's sod's law, he's going to end up starring in the Euros or something, and then it's going to become even more clear that we didn't make full use of his assets this year. So, and then, yeah, with Benteke, I feel like, yeah, he is probably playing for a contract, but he's also playing to get in the Euros squad double.
Yeah, definitely.
So, and then JP, I think we've kind of covered that, right? He's here for 18 months, but they're going to get him in and just probably give him a bit more of a starting role next year, I imagine, depending on who signs with us. So, I don't know. We've got a few games left. We're pretty much mathematically safe, aren't we? Probably just need one more point. So I feel like we should experiment a little bit. I think Mitchie and Benteke would be interesting. And I think Rob said on the post-match pod, if Wilf was to stay on the wing a bit more, that would be really interesting to test that out. So I'd be in favour of that. Let's mix it up and just see what we can do, combining different players and different combinations with the games that we have left. And then we've got the new, we should probably, I don't know if you're going to give him a mention, but Rakšaki, who's on the bench. Like, let's give him some game time as well, mixing it up with those players. So no point in just persevering with the same team sheet like this for the next few games. Let's mix it up a bit with a kind of combination of all of the above.
Yeah. Lovely.
Can I put a request in that we come up with a better nickname for him than JP? We've got this beautiful, fit young man who's got the same nickname as Jonathan Pearce.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's quite right, really. I think we need a more glamorous nickname for a more glamorous player, don't we, than JP. But Jesse's quite right. Yeah, we are safe. There's no two ways about it. So let's try a few of these players. Let's try a few more combinations, because you can't get worse than it did on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Rakšaki is a good shout as well. I actually haven't got any notes to mention him, but obviously was on the bench, has been fantastic for the under-18s recently, and has just today they've announced, although I believe it had been wrapped up for some time, that he has signed a professional contract at Palace as well. Brilliant. So none of these rumours of going to Germany or anything like that.
Does anyone know where Ferguson is on his way to fitness?
He's had another setback.
Another setback, apparently, right.
According to Dom and Matt. Yeah, so not particularly great news there. But hopefully we will see Rakšaki maybe before the end of the season. As Jesse says, some sort of combination would be great. We've done my usual thing of I've said we'll rattle through the questions. We spent ages on the first question, so I'll try and get more in really quickly before we do. Just a yes or no answer to all of you. I'll go to Jesse first, and this is completely random, so forgive me for it, but it's linked to the Twitter activity on Saturday. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no, Jesse?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I mean, I've got more of a problem with chicken on pizza, but this could go on forever, couldn't it? So that wasn't a yes or no answer. Let's just say yes.
Kevin?
I really upset an Italian chap the other day by telling him that I had a risotto sandwich for lunch. So I'm going to get my way back into the Italian nation by saying no pineapple on the pizza.
Risotto sandwich sounds like the band that Tekkers JP, the album Tekkers JP. That's what we do. So, Mike, pineapple on pizza?
Hell no.
Hell no.
I did nearly rethink my participation based on that on that discussion over the weekend. But I have to be very careful because the other half loves pineapple on pizzas. So, well,
yeah, as we all know, it's the way forward. No, I got very bored. I got very bored tweeting on Saturday. So but I opened Pandora's box a little bit there. But there you go. We've covered that one. Stephen Goldring.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Stephen.
Is it time to drop PVA or Patch Armhole, as my kids call him, which I think I might actually name this week's pod. Sounds like sort of a Robin Williams character of some sort. Time to drop PVA for now, Kevin. What are your thoughts? Is Mitchell fit enough to play? I think it comes down to that.
I don't know. I would say yes, 100%, were it not for the fact that in the last couple of seasons, this is the last six or seven games, not so much the last season, but the seasons before that, the PVA kind of comes into his own a little bit when we're safe. He's more secure going forward, which is what he wants to do. But if Mitchell was fit, I would 100% say Mitchell's the future. PVA just doesn't want to defend. He's just not a natural defender. I still think there's an argument for pushing him forward. There's an argument for having Schlupp as a left back. I don't know, but we've got a problem down that left-hand side. There's no two ways about it. And, well, to be fair, we've got a problem with Wardy. I think Wardy's had, until Saturday, I think Wardy had done really, really well in the last six or seven games. Really well in the last six or seven games. Not to the extent that I think he should be our starting right back next season, but I think that's, we all know the areas that need strengthening, and fullback is two of them. Mitchell will be our starting fullback next season. I think PVA needs to be taken out of the firing line a little bit, because when he makes mistakes, they really are there. When he doesn't look, only Wilf sometimes looks less like he wants to play for Palace than PVA sometimes. it's really stands out, you know. And Saturday was one of those games for both of them, basically.
Yeah, Mike, it was very telling when Schluppy came on Saturday, and suddenly that left side started to look a bit more like a normal left side. And I just think the future is Mitchell at left back, and then either Eze or Schlupp, isn't it? So really, at this point, and his contract's up in the summer, it's time to say goodbye, really, isn't it?
Well, it comes back to that. Does he really want to be there if the request or his wage demands are to be believed, then he's really not worth what he thinks he's worth. I think he's been lucky that Mitchell has been injured. Otherwise, I think he would have been outside. I think Mitchell started for the under-23s this afternoon. So he's obviously on the way back. And I think he is the way forward. You've got obviously a need to bring somebody else in if Ferguson's not going to make next season now, because he played 50% of his time at West Brom on the left in the fullback position. So there's cover there. It's who gets the contract out of Klein and Wardy for the other side. But we know that both of them are quite capable at left back. But I think PVA's served his purpose. He's run his contract down. He's obviously looking for more money. And I think everyone would rather see Mitchell start. And I think that gives Eze that slightly firmer ground to work from. And I think Schlupp just brings that little bit of extra pace that we're sadly missing. And that's why everyone sort of just notices him so much when he's not playing, is that he's got so much more thrust. You know, that little burst of speed and the cross for the goal on Saturday just sort of summed it up, what we were missing really on that side. And he can play left back as well. So he's a versatile guy.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think if we can just see where Ferguson is, and I think we're covered without PVA next season. And if he wants 100 grand a week to re-sign, that's not where we should be going anywhere near. So if he wants to go to Turkey and sun himself, which is allegedly who's offering the money, then off he goes, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Jesse, are you a PVA fan?
I do like him, but I do think he's more valuable in the attacking half of the pitch, which is not what you want from a defender, but that's kind of how he's going to be remembered, isn't he? And we've just seen the emergence of Mitchell. It's a no-brainer to just kind of concentrate on the future and of that position. So I can't see there's any good reason to re-sign him, especially when there's so many other areas that need to be addressed. So many other players. He's so far down the pecking order of the priority list of who we need to re-sign. So I think this is it. This is his swan song. And he might as well throw hell to leather and just get and bomb on forward and, you know, give himself a good send-off with a few goals, because we know he's got it in him.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it'd be nice to see him actually return to form in the last few games.
Sometimes a player asking for that much money in wages is not his way of wanting to stay. It's his way of wanting to go, basically. Because he probably knows he's got one more two-year contract in him. You know, China used to be the get-out clause until 3 or 4 years ago when the Chinese government fell out of love with football. And Turkey's one of the few countries that seems willing to invest in players past their sell-by date that have got a bit of Premier League cachet to them. So I think that's Van Aanholt's way of saying, look, you don't particularly want me here, I don't particularly want to stay here, so I'll ask for £100,000. You can hand on heart say, well, we love you, but we can't afford it. But off you go, basically.
Yeah.
Thanks. All the help.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some big goals along the way. So,
yeah, absolutely. He's been a quality player for us. Without a doubt, he was he's one of those players that Allardyce bought him, wasn't it? The four that came in, he's been outstanding at times.
Isn't he the highest scoring left back in the Premier League or something along those sorts of lines?
Since he signed
for us,
fair play, but all good things come to an end. Unfortunately, much like this episode is about to do in a minute because I've just seen the time. But before we do that, a couple more questions. This one is on transfers. We don't have time to do transfers today, unfortunately. We will in the future, but I wanted to read it out because it's from a Mr. Sembogo John Kyagulanyi, who.
Hi, Sembogo.
Says, who are our possible transfer targets who wish to sign for next season? Because it seems like our conversion rate is poor compared to the other teams we compete with. Fair point, and worth a discussion at some point. But he ends up saying, thank you, I'm from Uganda. And I think it might be the first time we've ever had someone send in a question from Uganda. So just to say hello to him, we will answer the question at some point. But Sembogo John, thank you very much for messaging in, because it's nice to hear that we are reaching all over the planet, really, Kevin. So that's nice.
Well, it's also a brilliant illustration of how this pod works. We're not actually going to directly answer the question. we're going to point out where the question's coming from, which is...
I just think it's nice to know where these...
I think we'll probably have to do a transfer special. But we've always talked about this before. It's like that night before the FA Cup final when that random invitation to anybody who had no friends in town that were coming in from abroad, and we ended up with 140 people from about 60 different countries. I'm always very proud to think that there are Palace fans all over the world listening to us, wishing they were in Norbury or but it's true, we are. We represent something for a lot of those people, and it's brilliant. It's exciting to think of people all over the world listening to us talk bollocks about Palace.
Yep, and it's nice to hear from them as well. So thank you very much for that tweet. Our final question then is from Ray Kalinouskas. Again, sorry, Ray. I think you're messaging quite a lot, and I think I butcher your name every time. He says, do we need a different piece of paper? Do we need a different piece of Kevin's paper to cover the current situation? Kevin, every time we lose, we get a question about your paper situation. What is it?
Do you know what? I almost wished I had just done the piece of paper as normal 6 games ago, so I could look at it and go, no, we're fine. Because I keep having to remind myself that we are fine. There's no need for the piece of paper. That, you know, although having said that, it's come back in 4 games' time with 2 games to go, I might still think we need it. No, Fulham have only got 6 games left. As Streety would say, it beggars all logic to think they're going to win more games in the last 6 than they have done in the previous 32. And they've got a tough run in. It's just, I just don't want us to do what we did last season and just fizzle out, basically, because it does, well, it actually doesn't, as I say, it does go into next season, but it didn't because we won the first 2 games this season. So it's just, and again, it comes back to the conversations we've had many times with Jesse about fans not being there, because I don't think it would have been allowed, it would be allowed to happen. That, you know, he would have had to make changes on Saturday after 10, 15 minutes because the crowd wouldn't have allowed him not to. Essentially, or it might be that the back four would have been more alert and more awake. You know, you scoffed at my theory about goalkeepers being dozy because there's no crowds, and then look what happened.
No, I would never scoff at you, Kevin. I would never scoff.
Since you had a book out and your confidence levels went through the roof.
I wish my confidence levels went through the roof. I wonder what that feels like. Well, listen, we're wrapping up the pod. Mike, it's been lovely to have you on. Let me just ask you briefly, though, if you had a piece of paper like Kevin, would you be bringing it out or would you be confident that Palace are safe?
I've been quietly confident for a while. Always nice to hear that Kevin's paper wasn't required.
Yeah.
And I think it's not been pretty this year, but it's been very functional. It's been points before pretty is my little saying. I think as much as we all moan about it, I think it's been magnified by the fact that we've not been at Selhurst. We've not been able to get to the games and be part of it. And we're dissecting every single little bit. Video analysis is just thrown at us. We were saying before we started, JD, it's going to be strange when there's not football on the telly 24/7. You know, getting up and watching four games on a Sunday is going to be, it's going to be strange, but it'd be nice because hopefully we've been at Selhurst the day before.
Can you hurry up? It's West Brom Southampton at 6 o'clock.
Kev's, yeah, but as you say, Kev, you'll be bored after 15 minutes and be watching countdowns or something.
I will, but you make it. I think that points before pretty is a very good mantra, but I suspect that might be what we have to put up for the next two seasons, is what I suspect.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
I've got so many names this week's episode. Patch Armhole.
I know, Patch Armhole. No, Patch Armhole. Go with Patch Armhole.
Is there that, or Pineapple Belongs on Pizza, or Points Before Pretty? I mean, whatever. Yeah. Well, go Patch Armhole. Good. Well, look, Mike, thank you so much for coming on this podcast.
Pleasure.
Thank you for your support via Patreon as well. We do really,
so it's
really
good fun.
And well, it's brilliant. And all our patrons, we appreciate your support massively. So thank you, Mike. Round of applause for Mike for a second appearance on the pod.
Thank you.
Great having you back on. Kevin and Jesse as well, great to see you as ever. Next week there's no game, so but we'll do an episode of some sort. We'll do something during the week and to fill the void.
Do something with one of your other brand spin-offs that you've got.
I don't know what you're talking about. I would never abandon you.
By the way, Matez has just scored twice for the under 23s, by the way.
Was he?
There you go.
There's another name for the pod.
It's like he was listening. Blimey. Well, there you go. That is the perfect place to end. So, Kevin, Jesse, Mike, thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure,
this week. The patron pod will be back. Oh, there is an episode of the weekend for the patrons as well. We're going to do a Roy special, even though there's no game. So, keep an eye on that if you're a patron. And if you're not, go to patreon.com/FYP podcast and sign up. In the meantime, enjoy your week off from Palace, and we'll see you again very soon. Goodbye.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Podcast Network.